or for something else. What was she playing at? I cleared my throat awkwardly. In one of her mercurial shifts of mood, she flashed me a smile and hauled a box out from underneath the love seat. Inside was a collection of wigs, dozens of them, stored in soft mesh bags and arranged by color. Holmes drew a hand mirror out from the box and peered at herself for half a second before smoothing her hair up into a knot. "So this conversation is over," I said, but I might as well have been talking to the air. It was no use. I'd been outplayed. She didn't want to talk about August Moriarty, and so she wouldn't, and nothing I could say would change her mind. Getting to watch her transform herself helped soften the blow. She did it with all the cool efficiency of a violinist tuning her instrument. A stocking cap went over her hair, followed by the wig, long blonde hair curled at the ends, and makeup that she applied with an expert hand, balancing the small mirror between her knees. I didn't know the terms for what she did, but the face that looked up at me was doe-eyed and glimmering, her cheeks pink, her lips smudged with sticky gloss. She spritzed herself with perfume. Then, without a hint of modesty, she pulled a pair of plastic inserts from a bag and slid them, one at a time, into her bra. I turned away, my cheeks burning. "Janie?" asked a bright American voice as she stepped in front of me. "Are you okay?" She was like textbook jailbait, all curves where there used to be straight lines. I hadn't registered before that Holmes had perfect posture, but I noticed the absence of it now as she stood indolently in, dear God, knee socks. The blonde wig and makeup lit up her gray eyes, imbuing them with a friendliness that I hadn't thought they could have. And the look those eyes were giving me was criminal. "I'm Haley," she said, her pronunciation lazy and Californian. "I'm a prospective student for next year. My mom's in town, but I wanted to, like, see the campus for myself. Is there a party tonight?" She touched my chest with a finger. "Do you want to take me?" I'd never been so turned off in my life. I stepped back into her chemistry table. The beakers rattled against each other. One crashed to the floor and shattered, and then there Holmes was again, underneath all the false wrapping, severe and mysterious and pleased. "Good," she said in her usual hoarse voice, rapidly tossing things into a backpack. "If you hate Haley, she'll do just fine for my purposes." "Which are..." "Be patient," she said. "I promise I'll tell you everything later." She glanced at the suspects list, at the name at the bottom, August Moriarty. "Everything, Watson, but not now." "This is completely unfair," I pointed out. "It is," Holmes smiled to herself. "We can talk more at the poker game tonight. I'll be there as myself." "No one's going to come. Everyone thinks we're murderers." "Everyone will come," she said correctly, "because everyone thinks we're murderers." "Well, you'll be lucky if I'm there." "Yes," she said simply. "I will be." "Fine," I said, throwing up my hands, because she'd won, check and mate. She was already at the door, and having taken those 5 steps, she wasn't Holmes anymore. With a coy wave over her shoulder, Haley said, "Bye, Jamie." And then I was alone, with nothing to do but sweep up the shards of the beaker from the floor. I wasn't sure if it was our dubious celebrity or just brewing excitement for homecoming weekend, but Holmes had been right about the crowd. When I arrived at Stevenson at 11:30, the basement kitchen was already overflowing with people. Some freshman boys had spun off a satellite game of 5-card stud in the common space, and I had to push past a group of giggling girls to get through the kitchen door. Instead of going silent at my presence the way everyone else did, they giggled louder. Gritting my teeth, I finally got through to the card table at the back. Holmes wasn't anywhere to be found, but Lena was holding court in an improbable top hat. I'd seen her around, but I hadn't paid much attention to her before. There wasn't any doubt that she was beautiful, in a way I'd heard Tom wax rhapsodic about late at night. Long, straight hair, inky eyes, brown skin. Tonight she was flushed with excitement and something else, probably vodka, and she'd stacked her mountain of chips into a neat pyramid. When she spotted me, she waved me over. The boy sitting next to her wasn't Tom, and he didn't look happy to see me. "Hey, killer," he spat. I ignored him.
"Hi, Jamie," Lena said, ignoring him too. "Do you want to play? We're out of chairs, but I can totally deal you in if you want to stand."
"Actually, he can have my seat. I need another drink."
The girl on her other side, Mariella, I think her name was, pushed herself to her feet and tottered over to the counter, where I spotted a handle of vodka brand vodka and some dubious-looking pineapple juice. The freshman girl that had asked me to homecoming was playing bartender. I avoided her eyes, too. Was there anyone I wasn't avoiding?
"I'm happy Mariella left," Lena told me conspiratorially. "At least $50 worth of this haul is hers." Was hers, I guess. Oops. If she were anything like the other Sherringford students I'd met, Mariella wouldn't miss her money in the slightest. I thought of the $35 left in my checking account that I couldn't afford to lose, and turned Lena down when she offered to deal me in, telling her I didn't know how to play.
"I'll try to pick it up, though," I lied. Really, I just wanted to keep my seat until Holmes arrived, since I didn't know anyone else here.
"Oh, my God," Lena said, putting a hand to her chest. "You're British, too? You two are adorable. I love it."
In England, I was an American. Here, it was the opposite. "Actually, I was born here," I said. "Are we going to play or not?" the guy next to Lena asked.
"Not," she said, pushing back her chair. "Or whatever, you guys play. I want to talk to Jamie."
She stuffed her chips into the pockets of her dress and pulled me aside. I didn't bother to correct her on my name. I'd just about given up on asking people to call me James.
"I just want you to know," she said, over-enunciating each word, "that I don't think you and Charlotte killed Lee. Look at you. You're adorable, and now you're blushing. That's even more adorable. It's like you were invented to get her over that whole August thing. I totally refuse to believe you guys have gone all Bonnie and Clyde on Lee." She frowned.
"He sucked, anyway."
"August?"
My voice caught on his name, and I winced.
I don't know any Augusts. Who's that?"
"Hold on," she said. "Let me take another shot." I may have been a terrible liar, but Lena was drunk.
"Oh, you know, August, the guy back home. She was pretty upset about it when she got here last year. I mean, she didn't say she was upset, but I heard her talking on the phone about him, you know, through the door. Then her brother came to visit, and they were all, like, CIA about it the whole time. I kept hearing his name, which is a weird name, so I remembered it. Anyway, Milo left, but before he left, he was all like, 'I'm going to do something about this,' and she was a lot happier after that."
She put a hand to her mouth.
"Shit. Oh, shit. I probably shouldn't have told you that. Girl code."
I wanted to ask her what, in fact, she had told me, except maybe about one of Milo's drone hits.
"It's fine," I said, drawing from the sane, imaginary place in my head, where no one was brutally killed down the hall and my only friend deigned to tell me the barest facts about her life. "I know all about it. Failed love. Tragic, really. And that house fire with all the puppies."
"Exactly."
She pressed her hand against my arm.
"You guys are going to homecoming, right? I ordered this dress from Paris. You know, we go there every summer, my family does. But then it didn't fit right, and no one does alterations here. Not good ones, anyway. Charlotte has this beautiful black dress that I asked if I could borrow. Tom would totally flip out. But she said no, so I figured that she had a date."
Holmes probably had that dress made specifically for some Norwegian gala where she beat a foreign minister at chess, stole a French Yugoslavian treaty, and then smuggled herself into the hotel clothes hamper so that she could escape through the laundry chute. I wondered what it looked like. It had to be pretty spectacular if Lena wanted it that badly. A long dress, I imagined. Black and slinky, something a Bond girl would wear.
But Lena was wrong about Holmes having a date. The only boy she'd ever consider taking was... I cut off that line of thought. Where was she anyway? It was past midnight. Yeah, I said, craning my head to look over the crowd. No, I don't think Holmes does dances. Is it okay if I step outside and look for her? I can throw out your drink if you're finished. Lena was beginning to look a bit sick. As I eased the cup from her hand, a thought occurred to me. Lena, I said, why did Holmes start having these poker nights? She doesn't seem to like... I was about to say anyone before I caught myself. Crowds. Isn't it kind of weird for her to host them? Oh, Lena said, surprised. You know, her parents don't give her any spending money or anything, and Charlotte burns through a lot. I think she does a lot of online shopping. She always has packages at the front desk. I coughed to cover my laughter. I was positive those packages contained something more sinister than designer clothes. Lena really was the perfect roommate for Holmes. I had to give her that. Anyway, you know, she always knows when people are lying, so I guess it makes sense for her to play poker for cash. I think it's funny. Tom snuck up behind Lena and put his arms around her. Baby, you're drunk, he said, leaning in to kiss her on the cheek. Baby, stop. I got a poker. Charlotte's not here, and I'm making a killing. I think I'm going to get a Prada purse. Better split it with me before you cash out. Tom kissed her again, and she wrinkled her nose. Since I'm your muse and all. Her poker muse, I said, as seriously as I could manage. I bet you Charlotte's his, Tom stage whispered. Oh my gosh, that's so cute. Lena touched my cheek and turned back to the game, depositing her chips on the table in handfuls. When she looked away, Tom filched a few and slipped them in his pocket. I pitched Lena's drink in the trash and set off in search of Holmes. Since I was already in Stevenson, I snuck up to check her room first. It wasn't hard at all to get past the hall mother, asleep on her pillowed arms at the front desk. I quickly found Holmes's door on the first floor. Lena had covered it in paper flowers, and there was a note card bearing her name in curly purple script. Holmes's name was hastily scribbled in black ink below it. The door was unlocked, Lena's fault, I was sure, so I let myself in. Unlike the room Tom and I shared, which could have won awards for its messiness, theirs was as neat and orderly as only a girl's dorm room could be. Lena's side was a riot of color, big pillows and bright tapestries, the shut laptop on the desk covered in stickers. She had photos of young Cary Grant pinned to her corkboard, nestled between song lyrics that she'd copied out onto sticky notes. She'd left her keys on the desk, more or less what I'd expected. I was much more interested in Holmes's side, but it seemed that she had scrubbed all traces of herself from her room, saving her brilliant oddness for Sciences 442. Her desk was bare and clean, except for a digital clock, and the corkboard above boasted a single bright blue post-it that read, "Love you, girlie, XO, Lena," and had curled a bit with age. That Holmes had left it up that long was surprisingly endearing. On the shelf above her bed, her textbooks were all in a neat line, and on the bed itself was a navy coverlet, and below that was a sleeping Charlotte Holmes, wig askew, mascara already beginning to rub off below her eyes. I shut the door softly behind me. "Holmes," I whispered, and before I could say it again, she sat up like a shot had gone off. "Watson," she croaked and reached blindly for her clock. "I just meant to lie down for a moment." "It's fine," I said, sitting at the edge of her bed. "You're probably still catching up on sleep. It's not healthy to go 3 days without it. You'll start hallucinating." "Yes, but the hallucinations are always fascinating." She stacked her pillows behind her back. "So?" she asked in a "why are you here" voice. "So," I said, "how did it go? Did you learn anything? Who were you targeting?" She heaved a sigh, pulling off her wig and stocking cap. "Watson," she said again. "Really?" "I'm a murder suspect, too," I reminded her. "And I thought we were partners in this. You dress up in this whole ridiculous thing, and then you don't tell me how it went? Spill. I didn't learn anything. Anything at all. I must have spoken to at least 15 first-year male students. Statistically, murderers are more often men, and anyway, Haley is useless with girls. They generally want to drown her in the nearest river. And none of them showed the slightest sign of being responsible. She said it all in a rush, like she wanted to expel it from her system. And I'm starving. I'm never starving. I ate yesterday. You had to have learned something, I said, choosing to ignore that last part. In my short experience with her, Holmes had treated her body like an inconvenience at best, and at the worst of times, like an appendage she was actively trying to destroy. No, she said petulantly. It was an utter waste of my time, and I used the last of my Forever Ever Cotton Candy perfume to do it, which means I have to order more, and they only sell it on the Japanese eBay, and it's not cheap for something that smells that foul. And God, the humiliation of getting those boxes in the post. She stuck a hand under her pillow, producing a trio of wallets. I was mad enough to pick three of their pockets, which should at least cover the cost, if not the emotional damage. Holmes, I said slowly, taking one from her. The wallet itself was worth more than my mother's flat, and it was stuffed with cash. You can't do that. We have to give these back. She cocked an eyebrow at me. These were the ones who tried to get me drunk so they could have their sordid way with me. Well, then, I pulled out five $20 bills and tossed them on the bed. That's more than enough for your perfume. Do you know what we're going to do with the rest? Give it all back to appease your sudden fit of conscience. No, I said. There's a car key on Lena's ring. We're going out for midnight breakfast and then giving the rest to, like, charity. I'll have toast, Holmes told the waiter, handing him her menu. Two pieces, whole wheat, no butter, no jam. No, she'll have the silver dollar special, with her eggs sunny side up and bacon instead of sausage. I fixed her with a scathing look. Unless there's something else on the menu she'd rather have that isn't under side orders. She snorted. Right then. He'll be having the same thing, except he wants sausage, not bacon. And please do keep on giving him decaf instead of regular. It's a mistake on your part, but it works to my advantage. He's quite cranky when he doesn't sleep. The waiter scribbled down our orders. Happy 50th anniversary, he muttered and moved on to the next table. Ignore him. He hasn't had a girlfriend in 3 years, Holmes said. Did you see his shoes? White laces. That alone should tell you. I couldn't help it. I started snickering. Holmes graced me with one of her quicksilver smiles. She'd wiped most of the mascara from under her eyes and taken off her wig, but she was still done up like a Christmas tree. It was disconcerting, being able to see the thin gauze of persona laid over the real thing. There are at least 50 people in this restaurant eating breakfast at 2 a.m, she said, sipping at her water. All under the age of 20, and 48 of them didn't have it this morning, including Will Tillman, the freshman across the room who is never at breakfast and who is, in fact, most likely here to buy drugs. Why on earth is this place so popular? I don't understand. That's because you're a bit of a robot, I said fondly, and she rolled her eyes. So, are you the only one who can go incognito, or do I get to wear the disguise next time? Do you have one in mind? She asked, clearly struggling to take me seriously. I don't get to pull a Haley on the new girl students? She snorted. Even if I wasn't done pursuing innocent 14-year-olds, you really are just not pretty enough for knee socks. Well, I'd do a really good impression of a mindless rugger. No, you don't, she said. Thank God. You should tell your therapist that rugby does nothing whatsoever to alleviate your very real anger issues. Not my therapist, my school counselor. She hid a smile. All the same, you really should take up boxing or fencing. Fencing? What century are you from? Or solving crimes? Are you prescribing me your company, doctor? Detective, you can read me like a book. She lifted her glass, and I clinked mine against it. I was suffused with a sense of well-being. The restaurant was warm and warmly lit. Someone in the kitchen was making us pancakes, and I was sitting across from Charlotte Holmes. I felt at home enough to ask her something that had been nagging at me for a while.
Right. So I have a question. Tell me if I'm out of line.
She tipped her head.
My parents. It took me a minute to find the right words.
Well, my grandfather very notoriously sold his inherited rights to the Sherlock Holmes stories to pay off his gambling debts. We're just not important anymore. At least, we're not in the public eye. We might be trotted out for the occasional press op, but my father does transatlantic sales, which is a lot lamer than it sounds, and my mum works in a bank. The Holmes family, though, I mean, you guys have been yard consultants for generations, so why aren't they helping us? Where are they?
In London,
she said. Before I could protest or flip answer, she held up a hand.
In London, where they'll stay. They won't interfere.
But why not? I asked her.
Have you told them not to?
No. Holmes slumped against the back of our booth, rubbing the crook of her left arm.
Do you remember when I told you I'd been taught at home until I came to Sherrianford? Did you ever find it strange that I came here in the first place?
I didn't, actually, I told her. I assumed your family had tossed your room for drugs, found out about your habit, and sent you to America to do penance. When Lena told me tonight that your parents had cut you off, it more or less confirmed it.
Holmes blinked at me. Then she started laughing, a rare and surprisingly unwelcome sound.
The waiter brought our food, and I'm sure we made quite the sight, Holmes giggling into her hands, me glaring at her across the table.
Tell me the funny part isn't my solving a mystery on my own, I said, stabbing at a sausage.
She managed to compose herself.
No, she said. I'm laughing because I was a fool to think you wouldn't.
You're entirely right, of course.
And they cut you off because they thought you'd use the money to buy drugs.
No, she said again. They cut me off because I wasn't fit to be their daughter.
She dipped a finger into her water, tinkling the ice cubes.
In their eyes, my vices got in the way of my studies.
I looked at her, so thin and angular and sad, so surprised at herself every time that she laughed, and I wondered what it would have actually been like to grow up in the Holmes household. Long velvet curtains, I thought, and libraries filled with rare books. A hushed fight always happening the next room over. Charlotte and her brother made to wander around the house in blindfolds, listening at doors for practice, scolded for any emotional attachments except to each other. It sounded like a movie, but it must have been hell to live it.
Eat, I said, pushing her plate at her. To appease me, she took a single bite of bacon.
Did you even want to be a detective?
That was never the question. I've been solving crimes ever since I was a child. I do it well. I take pride in how well I do it. Do you understand?
I nodded quickly. There was a fire in her eyes.
But I was the second child. Milo has always done everything they've ever wanted him to. I can't say it hasn't paid off. He's one of the most powerful men in the world, and he's 24 years old. But I... She smiled a secret, pleased sort of smile. I'm not interested in doing anything I don't want to.
And so they sent you to America to cool your heels... Holmes shrugged.
The mail had a field day with all that. Will you look it up?
No, I said, and it was true. I'd always been afraid to shatter my fantasies of her by researching the real thing.
Unless... Do you want me to?
There's no point. Milo had every word of the scandal scrubbed from the web. I don't want you to know all about it. Not yet.
Her smile faded.
Anyway, it was awful. They printed my middle name.
She was trying to change the subject, so I let her.
Regina?
Mildred?
Holger?
None of the above. And to answer your original question, I've got to solve this mess myself. I'm sure that if I rang my family up and said, "Look, I'm about to be chucked in jail, will you help?" they would. Because they don't believe I can do it without them anymore.
I believe you can, I said. Though that might just be a necessary delusion. Otherwise, I'm forced to believe that this Sunday, Detective Shepherd will say that after a thorough investigation, it's clear that we are the guiltiest guilty murderers in the world.
That's not what he's going to say. She took another bite. How did you know I wanted bacon? Did you deduce that as well?
I guessed, I said, and watched the smile come back to her face. Try the pancakes. They're good. My father used to bring me here when I was in grade school.
I know, she said. You ordered without looking at your menu.
We sat in companionable silence for a long time. I'd long since finished my own food, so I watched Holmes cut her pancakes into tiny slivers, dropping each one in a bath of maple syrup before putting it in her mouth. It was nice to linger somewhere. I hadn't been comfortable anywhere at Sherrinford outside of Holmes's lab. Still, we were closing in on 3 in the morning by the time she'd finished eating.
"What's our next move?" I asked. "If we've ruled out the new male students, that's at least a start."
"Exotic animal licenses," she said. "Private owners first, then the zoos. You can begin digging in the morning to see who around here keeps deadly snakes. Surely one has to have been stolen. There's no doubt the police have already looked, but then I'm able to see things they can't, and everyone's falling over themselves to prepare for homecoming tomorrow, so we should be relatively free to move around." It was good to have a concrete plan. I felt myself relax a little bit further. Holmes cleared her throat.
"Watson," she said in a funny voice, "you weren't going to ask me to the dance, were you?"
"No," I said, maybe a little too quickly. I tried to imagine Holmes under a disco ball, jumping around to some top 40 song. It was easier to imagine a whale dancing, or Gandhi. Then I imagined some slow song. One that wasn't complete shit and the lights down low, and what it'd be like to have her in my arms. And I drank down my glass of water in one go.
"Did you want me to? Because I had the impression you didn't."
"Watson," she said again. I didn't know if she meant it as a warning or an endearment, but then I never knew with her. This was a subject I didn't want to touch without full body armor and a 10-foot pole. She'd warned me away from it the first time we ever spoke.
"Right," I said, picking up Lena's keys. "We should go before your hall mother wakes from her 1,000-year nap.
I held the door open for her. The parking lot was almost empty. I squinted, waiting for my eyes to adjust, and just then, at the far end of the parking lot, a black sedan started up. It kept its lights off as it peeled out of the parking lot.
"Holmes," I said, frozen.
Did that just happen because he saw us? But she was already running for Lena's car.
"Come on," she barked.
I fumbled to unlock the car, to back out of the space, to maneuver us out of the lot. Holmes was almost cross-eyed with impatience, but to my relief she didn't say anything. I hadn't exactly done a lot of driving back in London. I mean, I'd driven my mum's car through a parking lot, once. But my life dictated that the first night I was on the road, I'd end up in a car chase. It wasn't like the movies, I thought grimly as we pulled out onto the empty street. The sedan was only a pair of lights in the distance, speeding toward town. It was almost impossible to stay on its tail. The dark was stripped away by a series of streetlights, and ahead of us, the sedan burned through one red light and then another, leading us away from Sherrinford and toward the coast. Holmes had pulled a pair of folding binoculars from God knows where. She leaned forward, peering through the windshield. "The driver's alone. He has a black coat and a black hat down over his ears. Blonde hair under it. I can't see his face. There's a case in his front seat. The kind my old dealer used to carry his..."
"Dealer?" I asked tersely.
She shot me a look from behind the binoculars. "Yes." I thought about the pinched-faced man talking to the BBC reporter. Charlotte Holmes is the head of this messed-up cult, and James Watson is, like, her angry little henchman.
"I think I know who it is. But if he's a dealer, why the hell is he running from us?"
"Watson," she said in a warning tone as I bore down on him. We cleared 70 miles an hour. 80.
"You're not going to tell me to slow down, are you?" I asked, clutching the wheel.
"No," I heard the smile in her voice. "I was going to tell you to go faster." We blew past dark farmland and stands of trees, past hints of civilization, a bait shop, a crappy motel. My brain was racing as fast as the car. If the police pulled us over and hauled us back to school, we'd be expelled for sneaking out after hours.
If the car in front of us braked or even slowed down, we'd be dead. My hands tightened on the wheel. I wasn't going to let up, not this close to finally learning something concrete. Give us a clue, I thought. A real one. Let us get just a little bit closer. At the next intersection, he jerked into a hard right turn, trying to take us by surprise, which is when he lost control. Under the bright streetlights, his car spun out down the center of the road, finally beaching itself on a curb outside a shuttered gas station. I slammed on the brakes, and we fishtailed after him. Holmes's binoculars flew out of her hands and into the windshield with a sharp crack. We shuddered to a stop 2 feet from the sedan. If I didn't know it before this, I knew it now. I wasn't like Charlotte Holmes. I wouldn't ever be, because while I was still unbuckling my seatbelt with shaking fingers, trying to remember how to breathe, she'd freed herself, cleared our car, and was wrenching open the door of the black sedan, while he was escaping through the passenger side. "Holmes!" I yelled, stumbling outside. "Holmes!" We were in the middle of nowhere. Trees crowded the two-lane road, dense with underbrush, and I watched her crash after him into the pitch-black wood, shouting for him to stop. I took off after them. It was like a nightmare. Branches lashed back at me as I ran, leaving stinging welts across my face, my arms. More than once, my foot caught on a tree root and sent me sprawling, and when I picked myself up, they were that much farther away. I remembered suddenly being a kid in a wood like this one, playing a game of ghost tag in the dark. I'd hidden myself in a burned-out tree trunk, and I remembered the hand reaching in to tag me, a white flash in all that darkness. I'd screamed myself hoarse. Tonight didn't feel all that much different. Holmes pulled farther and farther ahead of me. She didn't trip. She didn't fall. She moved like a cat through the night. And then I couldn't see her anymore. "Come back!" I shouted, finally skidding to a stop. "Give it up!" I could hear him faintly, still crashing through the bushes. We weren't going to catch him. Besides, what would we do with him if we did? I didn't have any weapons. I didn't know how to threaten someone with anything but my fist. In the far distance, I heard sirens. "Holmes!" I shouted again. "Someone called the police!" "Jesus, Watson!" her voice said a little bit ahead of me. "I'm right here." She'd stopped to catch her breath. In the dim light, she looked as terrible as I felt, scratched and grim, but I saw her eyes gleaming with the thrill of the hunt. "We have to get back to the car," I said. "Now." When we got back to the road, the cops were still out of sight, though the sirens were getting louder. We were a long way from anything out here. As I started Lena's car, Holmes quickly rummaged through the dealer's sedan, taking pictures with her cell phone, touching everything through the cloth of her T-shirt. Careful, I knew, not to leave fingerprints. "Come on," I hissed. As she climbed back in, she tucked something small into her pocket. "Pull around to the back of the petrol station, park next to the owner's truck, turn it off, and duck down." I did as she said, and not a moment too soon. Red and blue lights flooded in through the rear window. I held my breath as the cop car circled the gas station, slowing down behind us. A door opened, closed. Footsteps padded up to our back window. If he shone a flashlight in, if he even glanced in, he'd see us. I thought I might throw up. And then a sound of something big thunking onto metal, as if he dropped his bag onto the trunk of our car. "I need to get my gloves out," the cop said, his voice muffled. "I know they're in here somewhere." "Well, hurry up," the other cop replied. "My hands are ass cold, man. Give me a second. We've got a single car crash and a drunk wandering somewhere in these woods, Taylor. We better get to it." Taylor must have found his gloves because there were footsteps again, retreating. The cruiser ambling back out to the road, and the officers getting out to look again at the sedan. Holmes turned to me with a look of morbid satisfaction. She'd been right. We hadn't been found. Crouched below the steering wheel, I rubbed my face with my hands. One way or another, this year was going to kill me. I could hear the pair of officers talking as they examined the black car, though I couldn't make out their words. An endless hour passed while they dickered about something. Their lights kept flashing. I fought to keep my eyes open. Holmes had folded herself down to the foot of her seat, still alert, somehow. Our wild chase hadn't exactly been subtle, and if someone had called it into the police, they would know there was another car. What if they came back around again, searching for us? I dug my hands into the seat, trying to steady my nerves. Then finally, we heard it. The unmistakable groan of a tow truck as the sedan was hauled away, the cop car following after. When I shut my eyes, I could still see the flashing lights, pulsing against the darkness. It was another half hour before Holmes gave the all clear. "We should wait longer," she said, her voice even hoarser than usual. "But the petrol station will be open any minute now, and I don't want us to get caught back here." Every joint in my body cracked as I climbed back into the driver's seat. I caught a glimpse of my face in the rearview mirror, scored here and there by the sharp fingers of branches. "Jesus," I said with feeling. Holmes cracked her neck. "All that for the campus dealer, some paranoid freak who probably just ran because we were chasing him." "Not a dealer," she said. "Something worse." My heart hammered in my chest.
"Like what?"
"It doesn't add up. If he's sampling his wares, as it seems from the powder spilled on the driver's side seat, why is he in such terrific shape? Why was he wearing $400 shoes and running like an Olympic sprinter? If he's a dealer, he's unlike any I've had contact with. I'd be shocked if he was Lucas, the townie who deals on campus."
"Why?"
Holmes's face twisted. "He ran like one of my brother's men."
"Did you see his face?"
She shook her head.
"Then how... No, wait. Your brother has men?"
"Several thousand, at last count. It's the most rational explanation. He has a tail or two on me most of the time. I imagine we ran into one and he panicked." I let that sink in.
"All that was because your brother was trying to check up on you? Your brother, who's a good guy.
It doesn't add up." "It's likely that Milo wanted to assess you, find out where your loyalties really lie. My friends, well, I haven't ever really had one before."
"Oh," I said.
She considered me for a moment, her eyes bloodshot. "I don't want my brother on your tail. You don't deserve that. You haven't done anything wrong."
"And you have," I said softly. "My vices got in the way of my studies."
We looked at each other. She bit her lip, took a breath. She was on the cusp of saying something, and then she turned away.
"What did you find?" I asked, finally. "What was that thing you put in your pocket?"
She didn't look at me.
"Let's get back," she said.
I tried not to look at the square outline of the thing in her jacket and started the car. We didn't talk. Instead, I turned on the radio as Holmes peered silently out the window. The passing streetlights washed her face, blank and bright. I couldn't tell you what was in her head. I couldn't even guess. But I was beginning to realize I liked that, the not knowing. I could trust her, despite it. If she was a place unto herself, I might have been lost, blindfolded and cursing my bad directions. But I think I saw more of it than anyone else, all the same.
5.
I spent the night of the dance catching up on homework. After Tom finished telling me how appalled he was at my decision, this took several hours, he got ready. Out of the corner of my eye, I watched him preen in the mirror. He managed to pull off his baby blue suit from sheer force of will. I think it would have made me look like Buddy Holly's deranged cousin. After asking me one more time if I wanted to go, "Mariella doesn't have a date, and she doesn't even think you're a murderer." He finally cleared out to go pick up Lena, leaving me to write a poem for Mr. Wheatley's class. I traded my contacts for my horn-rimmed glasses in an attempt to get myself in the proper mood. Pen hovering over the page, I wondered, not for the first time, what I was doing. For one thing, I used to like dances. That is, I liked taking girls to dances. Well, I supposed I just liked girls. I liked getting shy looks from them in class, and the way their hair smelled like flowers, and how it felt to walk along the Thames on an overcast afternoon, talking about which teachers they hated and what they were reading and what they'd do after we finished school. But But in my head, all those memories had begun to run together. I couldn't tell you if it was me and Kate at the chip shop the night it snowed, or Fiona, if Anna was allergic to strawberries, if Maisie was the one my sister Shelby had adored. Even Rose Milton, the girl of my daydreams with her softly curling hair and endless string of awful boyfriends. I can't say that I would have left my room that night at Sherrinford, even if she'd asked me to be her date. Even if Holmes had asked me to be her date. I wondered if her misanthropy was beginning to wear off on me. I'd left her in Sciences 442 after a long, trying day. The spectacularly bitchy text war she pitched with her brother wasn't even the worst of it. She didn't show me the original message she sent him, but I saw the ones he'd returned. "No, you didn't find my spy," he insisted. "He's obviously still at large. For instance, I can tell you right now that you're wearing all black, and that Jamie Watson is annoyed with you. I have eyes watching you right now." "That is not spying. That is shoddy amateur deduction, and it is incorrect," she replied furiously. She was, of course, wearing all black. "Can we do some actual research, please?" I finally asked, trying to keep the irritation out of my voice. We'd spent an unsuccessful afternoon running down rattlesnake owners in Connecticut. Even after we extended our search to Massachusetts and then to Rhode Island, we drew blank. No one was missing their pet snake. At least, no one who would admit it to me in the guise of a chipper cub reporter researching a book on deadly animals and the owners who, gosh darn it, loved them anyway. Holmes, still fuming from her conversation with her brother, sat and watched me work. I scratched the last name off our list. "So maybe we should start calling the zoos." "This is unbearably tedious," Holmes snapped. "Do you know, if I had my yard resources, I'd have this case solved. God, in England, even my name would be opening us doors. Instead, I'm sitting here while you try to determine down the phone if these small-minded idiots with pet jaguars are lying to you, which you're not at all equipped to do." She flung herself down on a love seat, cradling her violin to her chest like a teddy bear. "Right then," I said, standing. "What was that thing you pulled out of that car last night? The thing you wouldn't show me?" She stared at me evenly. I threw up my hands. "Fine, I'll just go pack my things. You know, for jail." When she realized I was waiting for her to reply, she picked up her bow and began sawing out a Dvorak concerto so savagely that it quite literally drove me out the door. We had no leads, no real information, and tomorrow we'd have to account for whatever Detective Shepherd had dug up to indict us with. And if I wasn't arrested, I still had homework. Which left me in my room with my blank journal page. I tried to push the rest of it from my mind and get to work. Our assignment for Mr. Wheatley's Monday class was to compose a poem that was difficult for us to write. The prompt didn't help me much, since all poems were difficult for me to write. They were like mirrors you held up to a black hole, or surrealist paintings. I liked things that made sense. Stories, cause and effect. After an hour or two of agonizing crossouts, I dropped my head down onto my desk. There was a rap at the door.
"Jamie,"
I heard Mrs. Dunham say,
"I brought you a cup of tea and some cookies."
I let her in. She looked a bit dotty, as usual, with her crooked glasses and frizzy hair. But the cookies were chocolate chip and still warm.
"You're the only one in the dorm that stayed in tonight," she said, handing me the steaming mug. "I thought I'd come say hi. I know things have been hard for you lately."
"Thanks," I said, embarrassed. "I needed to finish some homework. Writing a poem." She made a sympathetic noise.
"Any luck?"
"Nope." She'd brought me English breakfast, and the steam fogged up my glasses. Right then, I wasn't sure who was more of a cliché, me or her. "Any advice?" She hummed, thinking.
"I've always liked that Galway Kinnell poem. Wait for now. Distrust everything, if you have to, but trust the hours. Haven't they carried you everywhere, up to now?"
She had a fine voice for reciting poetry, deep timbred and slow.
"Doesn't that just make everything better?"
It does, I said, and wished it were true. Behind her, in the doorway, a girl appeared.
Are you ready, Watson?
It was her strange, fantastic voice, even smokier than usual, and Holmes stepped into my room. I blinked rapidly. She'd done something with her hair. Instead of its usual glossy fall, it was tousled in unfinished-looking ringlets. Her dress looked nothing like I imagined. It looked, in fact, like the night sky. I could see why Lena had coveted it. A cut of it brought my eye to certain places I'd tried to avoid looking at.
"You look very nice," I said.
It was true. She also looked disturbingly like a girl. Haley had been made from plastic and wet dreams, and everyday Holmes was all exact angles, but this? Whatever this was, it was something else entirely. I wasn't sure if I liked it. From the way she shifted her weight from one heel to the other, it seemed Holmes wasn't sure either. What plot was she brewing?
"Hi, Charlotte," Mrs. Dunham said. "Jamie didn't tell me you were coming."
"Yes, I'm sure he forgot," she said. "We're in a bit of a hurry. The dance is nearly halfway done."
"We are, and I was wearing my glasses and a pair of Highcombe sweatpants. With an expressive sigh, Holmes began rifling through my drawers.
"Braces," she muttered. "Or, as they say here, suspenders. I know you own the ridiculous things. Here."
She tossed them to me and kept looking.
"So you want me to wear them, or you don't?"
"Oh, do. It's your thing, with the leather jacket and the... yes, here we go. A skinny black tie and your nice shirt, and the trousers you wore on the fourth day of school, but that haven't reappeared since then. Dark wash. There. Socks and your Oxfords."
Mrs. Dunham scurried out of the way as Holmes buried me in a pile of my own clothing. I looked down.
"You're trying to make me into a hipster."
"I don't have to try." Holmes tapped her wrist where the watch would go.
"Time, Watson." "You really can't be here while he's changing," Mrs. Dunham said.
Holmes put a hand over her eyes.
"I am counting down from 100.
"Thanks for the heads up," I said, sorting through the clothes she'd given me. 99, 98. We were out the door with 3 counts to go. From across the quad, I could see the union all lit up for the dance. Each time the doors opened, I heard a bit of a song I couldn't quite place. On a bench sat a boy and girl holding hands. He was whispering in her ear. Nearby, a cluster of shivering girls admired each other's dresses.
"Are you going to tell me why we're here?" I asked Holmes, holding the door open for her.
She paused on the threshold.
"Not yet,"
she said, and went in.
Sherringford was a small enough school that we could all fit into the Union's alumni ballroom. Apparently, the school went bigger and fancier for prom. Tom was sure that this year's would be on a yacht. The theme had something to do with Vegas. The first thing I saw as we entered was a string of blackjack tables manned by real casino dealers in green and white livery. Holmes sidled over, only to make an affronted noise when she saw they were playing with Monopoly money. I was more interested in the chocolate fountain that burbled in the corner, crowded by people holding out skewered marshmallows. Otherwise, there were all the usual trappings, a punch table, strobe lights, a DJ. Bored-looking teachers were chaperoning, which meant they mostly chatted together in pairs. Out on the dance floor, girls swayed in dresses the colors of Christmas ornaments. We'd won the football game earlier, so the mood was victorious. As I took it all in, Cassidy and Ashton from my French class brushed past us. Cassidy looked lovely, and Ashton looked exactly like one of the Thundercats. I'd never seen such a radioactive-looking tan. What I noticed most of all was how many students had been pulled home. There couldn't have been more than 100 of us on the dance floor. Still, everyone seemed like they were having fun, no one thinking of the murder or their safety or anything except for the ABBA song that had just begun. It felt disconcertingly as though I stood with 1 foot in a novel and 1 foot in a shopping mall. I might have belonged here, but Holmes very much didn't. I turned to ask exactly what her plan was, when I caught her mouthing the words to Dancing Queen.
"Oh, my God," I said as she startled. Oh, my God. You just wanted to come here to... There are excellent opportunities for observation and deduction here, she said hurriedly. Look at the specimen pool. Everyone with their guard down, probably a good few drinking. The girl next to you has a flask of peach schnapps in that little bag of hers, and perhaps that dealer is here somewhere and...
To dance? I was trying very hard not to laugh. Would you like to?
Yes, she said, and fairly dragged me out onto the floor. Holmes, for all her strange and myriad skills, proved to be a terrible dancer. But what she lacked in skill, she made up for in absolute abandon. Under the kaleidoscope lights, her hair went blue, then red, then blue again, the music so loud that my head throbbed in time, and she flung her arm straight up as the chorus came, throwing her head back to mouth the words. She knew the words to the next one, too, and the song after that, and she sang them all with her eyes shut, shuffling her feet like a grandfather. For a glorious 12 minutes, I orbited her, and when she grabbed my hand and said, "Twill me," I spun her around as she laughed. A slow song came on, some treacly number by an English boy band my little sister liked. All around us, people slipped into each other's arms. Across the room, I saw Tom, resplendent in his ridiculous suit, dip Lena while she giggled. Holmes and I stood there in the middle of the floor, trying not to look at each other. I struggled to hide my panic. From the corner of my eye, I could see that Holmes's cheeks were still pinked from dancing. I said. There was a tap on my shoulder. The wispy blonde girl that had asked me to the dance stood there, her dress a dramatic red.
"Hi," she said shyly. "I thought you weren't allowed to come."
I watched Holmes rapidly catalog my reaction. After a moment, the girl turned to look at her, too.
"Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry. I'm in your way."
A little line appeared between her eyebrows, and I thought, for a moment, that she was going to cry. I was sure Holmes noted that, too. Her brain was like a bear trap. Nothing escaped alive. This had to be a nightmare. I'd look down and I'd be naked, and the dance floor would become my math classroom, and then I'd wake up. I didn't. "We're not... I'm not. I need something to drink," I managed, and darted away like the coward I was. The thing was, I didn't know if I wanted to slow dance with her, Holmes, or maybe I could just imagine it a bit too readily, how it would feel to have my hands on the small of her back, to have her uncertain breath hot on my neck, her soft laughter as the boy band sang, "I wanna kiss you, girl," how I'd drop my hands to her waist, pull her even closer to me. But if I squinted, I could see that blonde girl in my arms just as easily. Honestly, it wasn't very fair to any of us. I knew myself pretty well. I could be so easily taken in by the now, not thinking much about the after. But with Holmes, all I could think about was the after. Silent drives at dawn, wildfire conversations, sneaking into locked rooms to steal away evidence to our little lab. I wanted those things. I wanted the two of us to be complicated together, to be difficult and engrossing and blindingly brilliant. Sex was a commonplace kind of complicated, and nothing about Charlotte Holmes was commonplace, even the way she filled out her dress. No, I wasn't going to think about that. Our track record proved that we were too volatile to survive that sort of shake-up. Just this morning, she'd chased me from her lab, wielding her violin like a weapon. Tomorrow night, we might be sharing a cell. Tonight, I was getting punch. Mr. Wheatley, my creative writing teacher, was manning the refreshments table with a pretty-ish woman around his age. He looked deathly bored, but brightened a bit when I made it to the front of the line. It wasn't long. Not many of us were too lame to have someone to slow dance with. "Jamie," Mr. Wheatley said, though I could hardly hear his voice above the music. "What'll it be?" "How's the punch?" I asked. "Horrible." He leaned in to the woman next to him. "This is one of my best students," he said, pointing to me. "Jamie, this is my friend Penelope. She's keeping me company tonight." I didn't know that Mr. Wheatley had even liked my writing. Everything I'd turned in, my poems especially, came back to me in a mess of green ink. but I'd been working hard to revise them into something better, and it was nice to know my work was paying off. "It's lovely to meet you." I shook hands with Penelope. She had a sort of standard art teacher look to her, with her curly hair and loose-fitting dress. A nice counterweight for Mr. Wheatley, I thought, who always buttoned his shirts up to his collar. "She's a writer friend from New Haven," he said. "A poet. She teaches at Yale. Jamie might be someone you'd want in your freshman workshop in the not-too-distant future." "Oh, is this the one you were telling me about?" she asked Mr. Wheatley, who went a bit pale. "The murder investigation? Dr. Watson's descendant? So, do you write mysteries too, Jamie?"
"Not really," I lied, as I processed the rest of what she'd said. She'd heard about the police's suspicions about me. "You've been watching the news coverage."
Mr. Wheatley pulled at his collar.
"Oh, the media's moved on by now," she said. "But Ted's on top of it. He knows details they haven't even released to the press."
While I was trying to make sense of this, Holmes appeared, proffering a pair of chocolate-covered marshmallows on a fondue stick. An olive branch, I thought. She seemed to have forgiven my awkwardness, so I took mine with a thank-you smile. "Hello," she said to the adults. I made a round of introductions. Penelope was just saying that Mr. Wheatley's in the know about all that Dobson stuff, I said, a bit obviously. I wished we'd set up hand signals for this kind of situation, or that she was actually telepathic. There was a good chance that she could have deduced my suspicions just by looking at me, but I didn't want to take the chance.
"Oh?" she asked, her face perfectly blank.
"Yes, Mr. Wheatley cleared his throat. "I should do another walk around the room. Penelope?" She smiled politely at us, her interest already elsewhere, and the two of them glided away. "Well, you cocked that up rather badly." Holmes drifted back onto the dance floor. "So much for an olive branch." I pulled the second marshmallow off the stick and bit into it hatefully. I wandered the ballroom for a while, flopping down finally at an empty table. The dance was coming to a close, and the DJ had put together a long set of slow songs to end the night. The floor was thick with couples that would be social media official by the morning. I was surprised, and then less surprised, to see Cassidy and Ashton swaying together so close their foreheads touched. Randall, Dobson's roommate, danced the whole set with the little blonde freshman. He kept his hands low, grabbing at the fabric of her red dress. In his giant arms, she looked as small and inconsequential as a snack cake. I felt vaguely sick.
"Okay," Lena plopped down next to me. "Jamie, you look like a super pathetic."
"Where's Tom?"
"Playing poker." She pursed her lips. "Go talk to her."
"She's dancing with Randall," I said, being difficult on purpose.
"Jesus, come on. Charlotte's sitting outside alone. You guys are just sad without each other. There's like this obvious empty space next to you."
It was poetic, for Lena. She stood and offered me a hand. "Are you asking me to dance?" I asked. She cocked an eyebrow. I let her haul me to my feet. And she dragged me all the way across the ballroom and out the front door, where she gave me an unceremonious shove into the night air.
"Bye,"
Lena trilled and disappeared.
Holmes sat on a bench by the entrance, staring out across the dark quad at a particular copse of trees. It was where I'd faced down Dobson, I realized. It was the last time we'd talked before he died. She was shivering. I took off my jacket and draped it over her shoulders.
"Thank you," she said, not looking at me. A little notebook was open on her lap, her fingers splayed across its pages.
"Is that the thing you took from the sedan last night?"
Holmes nodded.
"And you brought it with you?"
I sat down next to her cautiously, the way you'd sit next to a bomb. I had questions. I didn't want her to hide the notebook away before I got a chance to ask them. To my surprise, she didn't.
"I didn't think I'd get to it," she said, and went on, her voice strange.
Was Holmes nervous?
"I played a few rounds of poker, but it wasn't sufficiently distracting. It was me and Tom and one of the chaperones, the school nurse. Tom spent the entire game staring at Lena's butt across the room.
So obvious. Everyone is so obvious. For example, that school nurse, she wishes she were a doctor. She misses her boyfriend, who has blonde hair and an earring, whom she's been with since high school, and who doesn't like her as much as she likes him. How